Blessings of the Triple Gem, Theruwan Saranai. Welcome back to everyone to Metta Lab, our slow sessions, and welcome to anyone who is a newcomer. We can begin our session by paying homage to the Triple Gem. We can bow our heads in Anjali. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dhamma, and homage to the Noble Sangha. So as we know these slow sessions, we are developing our loving kindness practice, beginning with developing metta based on the Karaniya Metta Sutta. So we've had two sessions so far. Then after we've done that, we will continue to develop and particularly develop the first doorway to Nibbana or the painful practice with slow realization. So this helps us to really solidify and understand why the first noble truth of suffering underpins loving kindness meditation. And then we'll continue to develop metta with the seven enlightenment factors, the bhujangas, as well as liberation of the mind by loving kindness. So metta, cetta, vimukti. So that's our plan of how we're going to go in Metta Lab. So far we've been developing loving kindness in accordance with Karaniya Metta Sutta. So let's begin by looking at how to get the best out of this session. So particularly for people who are new, keep an open mind, listen to the Buddha's words with an open mind. So be open to learning this way of following the Buddha's instructions in the sutta and developing it step by step. And understand that there are certain things that block loving kindness, and in doing so, have an attitude that, oh, I might have some of these qualities or unskilled states, so let me look at that. Let me remove those blocks. And then secondly, be okay with not understanding everything. Have a friendly attitude in these sessions. It's okay not to get everything all at once. These sessions are intended so that we revise, we repeat, and so everyone gets to go together. And sometimes we understand what we need to in each session, that even if it's one Pali word or understanding the meaning of one part of a sutta or one insight in the meditation. So remember, Buddha encouraged gradual practice, gradual training, and gradual progress. And remember that we're all learners. We're all learners or trainees on the Buddha's Noble Path. So this is our opportunity to come together, lean on each other's effort. And it's also an opportunity for self-care, that we put down our roles and responsibilities for just a little while. And when we do that, we look at what is the mind like right now? Is it happy? Is it sad? Is it stressed? Is it tired? Is it heavy? Or is it light? And by the end of the session, take another look at what the mind is after the session and know what is helping to lift the mind. And then let's use this time really to clean the mind, to actually calm it down, to concentrate it, and then to develop it and then be able to uplift it. And so that's how we apply ourselves to the meditation, that during this session, we do our best, whether it's short meditations or even a guided meditation. And so we do this by following the Buddha's instructions, do them sequentially. And it's okay if you don't remember everything. The important thing is to apply oneself and take the opportunity to practice with friends. So then we often ask, use your own examples. And the reason for this is the way that we connect with the Dhamma, that it's not just Dhamma that's sitting on the shelf, but we're actually trying to apply it to understand the meaning. So it's not about feeling guilty about unskilled states, because that's what we normally bring up, but we use our own examples so we can understand the Dhamma, connect with it, and then be able to transcend unskilled states that block us from the skilled ones, such as loving kindness and developing the Noble Eightfold Path. And so lastly, have good wishes for everyone, those who are joining this live, as well as everyone who's helped us on this spiritual path up to this point. So for today's Metta Lab, what I'd like to do is to run through another sutta that I haven't put on the reading list, which I think is quite important. It kind of supports what we've been doing in terms of developing up to this point. And then after that, as part of being a recap or some sort of looking at how we practice what we've covered so far, I thought we'd do a guided meditation up until easy to instruct. So what we've done so far is upright, thoroughly upright and easy to instruct. knowing that this is built on the skilled states, like doing what is of benefit and good, so the dasa kusala, the 10 wholesome states. So we'll do that guided meditation. Then, like, what I'd like to cover is gentle and not arrogant, so mudu and anatimani today. So let's begin. Now, one thing I would say about, and I will continuously bring this up, is about how loving kindness activates the Noble Eightfold Path. So Buddha, the whole way through, is activating right view. So in many instances, it's the distinction between what is kusala and what is akusala. So what is wholesome or skillful and what is unwholesome and unskillful. When we know that, then we have the right thought, because we give up the things that are akusala. And we start to develop the things that are kusala. And therefore, we also start to give up the ill will thoughts and also the harming thoughts. Now, right effort is what we apply, knowing what the right view is. And right mindfulness is always the one saying, okay, I'm mindful of what the right view is, of what is kusala, what is akusala, and right effort gets the job done. So uju, suju, suvicha, so far what we've done, upright, thoroughly upright, easy to instruct. A lot of this is about right speech, right action, and of course, right livelihood follows. And of course, the thoughts are always there in terms of correcting them, but making them right thoughts. So the end result is right concentration. The mind gets happy. The mind gets light, spacious. It's able to lift itself out of all the things that we constantly are bombarded with. So it's important to constantly come back to that, that what we're doing is we're meditating on the Noble Eightfold Path. And one form of that is loving kindness. So the sutta I'd like to bring up just before we do our guided meditation is this Sankha Dhamma Sutta. And it's about the conch blower. And this particular sutta is really good at reinforcing how we actually transcend unskilled states. So all these akusala, these unskilled states that we've been talking about, such as killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, the four kinds of verbal wrong conduct. And in this Asankha Dhamma Sutta, the Buddha actually asked this headman, his name is Asibandhaka Putta, and he's a lay disciple of the Niganthas. And what he asks Asibandha Putta is, he asks him, in what way does Nigantha Nathaputta teach the Dhamma to his disciples? And the headman answers him by saying that Nigantha Nathaputta teaches that if one were to kill, steal, engage in sexual misconduct and false speech, then one is bound for the state of misery, bound for hell, and that one is led on to rebirth by the manner in which one usually dwells. So that's not on the screen right now. I'm just reading out what's in the sutta. So then the Buddha points out to this chief Asibandhaka Putta that if one is led on to rebirth by the manner in which one usually dwells, so one's habit tendencies, then according to Nigantha Nathaputta's teaching, no one at all would be bound for the state of misery, bound for hell. And that's because if you were to compare the amount of time spent killing, stealing, engaging in sexual misconduct or lying, it's less frequent than time spent not doing those things. So then the Buddha asserts that a person following such a teacher, having confidence in such a teacher, would be in danger of following or acquiring that teacher's wrong doctrine and view, and that they would come to a dire outcome or result. So then the Buddha gives this teaching and says, but here, headman, a Tathagata arises in the world, an Arahant, perfectly enlightened, accomplished in true knowledge and conduct, fortunate, knower of the world, unsurpassed leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of devas and humans, the enlightened one, the blessed one. In many ways, he criticizes and censures killing living beings. And he says, abstain from killing living beings. He criticizes and censures the taking of what is not given. And he says, abstain from taking what is not given. He criticizes and censures sexual misconduct. And he says, abstain from sexual misconduct. He criticizes and censures false speech. And he says, abstain from false speech. Then a disciple has full confidence in that teacher, so the Tathagata. He reflects thus, in many ways, the Blessed One criticizes and censures the killing of living beings. And he says, abstain from killing living beings. Now, I have destroyed life or killed living beings to such and such an extent. That wasn't proper. That wasn't good. But though I feel regret over this, that evil deed of mine cannot be undone. And then having reflected thus, He abandons killing living beings and he abstains from killing living beings in the future. And this is what the Buddha says. Thus, there comes about the abandoning of that evil deed. Thus, there comes about the transcending of that evil deed. So this is very important for us to understand. This is what we're doing when we do the loving kindness meditation, when we disapprove. So the Buddha states the same thing in this sutta for stealing, sexual misconduct, the four kinds of wrong speech, covetousness, ill will, and wrong view. So the 10 kinds of wrong conduct that happen by body, speech, and mind. Now, Angulimala is an example, and we know the Angulimala Sutta in the Middle Length Discourses, number 86, that he was a murderer at the time of the Buddha and quite a famous one or infamous one. Now, the Buddha was able to teach Angulimala so that he gave up his killing spree, and he also ordained into the Sangha. And so by following the Buddha's teachings, Angulimala was able to abandon and transcend unskilled states such as killing, and to develop the skilled states, and eventually he realized complete liberation, Nibbana. So if Angulimala had continued on his killing spree, or if he had followed a teacher like Niganthanathaputta, the result would have been very bad. So the Buddha's teaching in this Sangha Dhamma Sutta supports what we've been developing in loving kindness meditation, that we understand what the Buddha is teaching is about skilled states versus unskilled states. And if we know we've done unskilled states in the past, and we do this from our own examples in the meditation, we know that wasn't a good thing. And so we regret and we disapprove of those past actions, knowing that they can't be undone. And so then we take that decision, like we spoke about Jnata Parinya, which is we have this knowledge of learning from the Buddha. And then we have the Tirana Parinya, that we make a decision, we have a choice. And then the Pahana Parinya is the abandoning. So we take that decision to abandon unskilled states in our meditation. And so Buddha is saying, this is the way that one transcends those unskilled states. So having done so, it means we are now able to cultivate and develop skilled states that support, in this case, loving kindness. So I thought I'd bring up this sutta because I think it really helps to support what we're trying to do in our meditation. So let's now recap and practice what we've covered in the last two sessions. So I'll guide a meditation. So let's start with making a wholesome intention to purify our physical, verbal, and mental actions. So we understand that if we have any unskilled states, akusala, it will block us from being able to develop boundless metta. And so we make an intention. We wish to develop this supramundane metta, just as the Buddha has instructed, and also to sharpen our spiritual faculties. So the first step, the Buddha says we must be upright, uju in Pali. So we need to check our physical and verbal actions. So let's begin with our physical actions. Have we killed any living beings? Panathipata. Do we destroy life? If we have, then we know this blocks metta. This is unskilled. So think of your own example. It can be recent or from childhood. And see that it blocks metta, that we need to abandon or give up killing living beings, that we do not approve of killing living beings. So take a few moments, take your own example. Let's now look at taking what has not been given or stealing, adatta dana. So this is where we steal or take other people's wealth or property without permission. And if we have, then this will block metta. So think of a recent example or something from childhood. see that it blocks metta, see that we need to disapprove of such things, it's harmful, and therefore we need to abandon taking what has not been given. Take a few moments. Now let's look at sexual misconduct. So this is kama sumicchara in Pali. So this includes cheating, sexual violence, wrongful things. So if we have any of these kinds of things in the past, we need to understand that this blocks metta, it's harmful. So think of an example and disapprove of it, that we need to abandon sexual misconduct. Okay, now let's look at our verbal actions. So have we had any false speech or lying? So this is musavada. Have we lied to gain something for our own benefit? If we have, must know that this will block metta. So again, think of an example from our childhood or maybe something recent. It could be at work, it could be in our homes with the people that are our families. Think of an example. And disapprove of lying, false speech, and make a determination, I want to abandon this. Now let's look at divisive speech, pisunavacha. Have we created division between people or groups? Have we broken up those who are in harmony? Think of a recent example or something from the past. Know that this blocks metta. So disapprove if we have divisive speech and abandon it. Now let's look at harsh speech, varusavacha. So have we spoken rough or harsh words to other people? Have we hurt people or offended them with our words? So if we have, this blocks metta. Think of a recent example, maybe at work, maybe in the family, maybe with a neighbor. And disapprove of varusavacha, of this harsh speech. Know that it doesn't go with metta, so abandon it. Now let's look at our frivolous or empty speech, sampapalapa. Have we gossiped, repeated words that are unbeneficial or worthless? Know that this blocks metta. Think of an example. Bring it to the mind. When we recognize that it blocks metta, disapprove of it. Abandon it. So now we've purified our physical and verbal actions, so we fulfill being upright. So this qualifies us to make a determination, which is about being thoroughly upright. So here we need to make a strong determination for this meditation that we want to keep our virtue, to prevent any unskilled physical or verbal actions from coming back again. So this is part of our right effort. So we need this in order to develop metta. So let's make that strong determination now. Let's keep our virtue. So by making that determination, it makes us thoroughly upright, suju. So this qualifies us to look at being easy to instruct, suvaca, or obedient to the Buddha. So we can't develop metta correctly if we're difficult to instruct or disobedient to the Buddha. So we need to check four things, if you remember. We need to check that we don't have these four things because they'll block metta. So the first one is makkha, derogation. So we ask ourselves, out of anger, have we belittled or lowered others in our mind? Have we removed their good qualities? If we have, then this is a definite block to metta. There's holes in our metta bucket. So think of an example that might be at work, or maybe within the family, or even within our community groups, where we've done that. And what we need to see is that we disapprove. This will not help us to develop metta. So we need to abandon it. So take your own example. Now let's look at envy, issa. Are we jealous of others? Do we think he or she has, I don't? He or she can, I can't? Do we think certain people are having permanent happiness? So think of a recent example, something that we're jealous of, and recognize that it's another hole in our metta bucket, that we tell ourselves lies. People are not having permanent happiness. So we need to disapprove if we have this kind of envy. We need to abandon envy. So take your own example. Now let's look at disparaging or divisiveness, palasa. So have we divided or split people based on our preferences? Have we excluded people because of a grudge? Then we need to see that as a hole, another hole in our metta bucket. We might have examples from people we know, work, friends, differing views. So think of your own example and recognize that we do not approve, we disapprove of disparaging or divisiveness. We need to abandon this. Now let's look at stinginess, macharya. So have we been stingy or selfish with our wealth? Have we been protective of our property? Have we excluded people or groups because of our preferences? Have we been protective of our reputation? Have we not shared or helped others with our knowledge? Or excluded people because of differing views? So if we have any kind of stinginess, just take one example, then this will block metta. We exclude those people that we don't like, that we don't agree with. So we do not approve of stinginess. We need to abandon it. By cleaning the mind of these four things, derogation, envy, disparaging or divisiveness and stinginess, we are now easy to instruct. We have transcended those unskilled mental actions. So take a few moments now to recognize the purity in the mind. Acknowledge the difference in the mind states before and after these steps. Acknowledge the ability to follow Buddha's instructions. And be happy that the mind is clean, that we're leaning towards skilled states that will help us to develop loving kindness. blessings of the Triple Gem, we can come out of the meditation. So we've now come to mudu. So we have meditated up to suvicca. So that is easy to instruct. So we now need to look at what does gentle mean. So this is mudu in Pali. And the prerequisite is, of course, this easy to instruct. So we've cultivated this in our meditation. So gentle is linked to courteous. Like if one is polite or courteous, then that makes one gentle. Another way of looking at that is if we're harsh or rude or have hard qualities, then it blocks loving kindness. We can't be gentle. We don't fulfill this. So gentle qualities align with loving kindness. And as we've highlighted before, quite often we notice rude or harsh behaviors in other people. There are things that we don't like, we don't approve of them. And if this is the case, it's an easy way of looking at our own behavior to ask the question, do we have the same kind of behaviors that we don't like in others? So at this stage, when we look at gentle, what we need to abandon or identify is physical rudeness and verbal rudeness. So let's look at physical rudeness first. And the mental ones we look a little bit later in our meditation of loving kindness. So we come back to that. Now, when we look at these things, what I find helpful is to acknowledge that how strongly we're conditioned towards retaliation, towards hitting back at people who have done us wrong, to even revenge. So we're highly conditioned by the world to believe that we're strong if we assert ourselves, if we take a stand, if we're hard or aggressive or even rude. So this can be in the workplace, it can be at home, and it can also be in our communities and out in the world. Like if you turn on the television, a lot of the behaviors, even physical behaviors of hand gestures and aggression comes across. We see it in the leaders in the world, and we see it even when we go to work and go about our daily business. Now, in the Buddha's dispensation, strength comes in a different way. It comes by way of restraint. It comes by making right effort to prevent and abandon unskilled states and to develop and guard the skilled ones. So that's something to really take into the mind when we look at gentleness, that strength in the Buddhist dispensation is far different. And when we are friends in Dhamma and we know each other lives by this Buddha's kind of strength, there's a comfort in that. So that's something that comes with loving kindness. So if we can see this, then it goes a long way towards identifying certain behaviors that are both conscious and unconscious that block loving kindness in the sense of rudeness, harshness, hardness. And so the question is, what if we don't come from the attitude of knowingly or unknowingly retaliating, hitting back? So some of these examples about being physically rude. So do we kick? Do we push? Do we shove? Do we fight? Do we slam doors? Are we late for appointments and meetups? I mean, there's something quite rude about that, and we'll come back to why. Even the way we sit or stand or move our body, is it something that will affect others? And in terms of acting on things without permission, you know, examples like, do we look without permission? Do we grab things without permission? Do we record things without permission? And many, many other things that we don't have permission, but we go and physically do. And then things like making faces at people, using rude signs, pointing at people. I mean, these are the things that the Buddha would not do. And in terms of jumping the queue, physically rude. And then when we drive, do we tailgate? Do we honk incessantly? Do we park in the wrong way? And then do we deliberately ignore people, whether it's in person or electronically? Like, do we ghost people? So these are the things that we can think of. And I'm sure that you have your own examples as well. So with physical rudeness, if we can see these behaviors as not being gentle, then we need to again disapprove of them and abandon them. Then when we look at physical or verbal rudeness, what are some examples? It could be that we call people names, that we play our music loudly and public places and disturb other people, that we scream, we shout, we raise our voice, and that's rude. It could be that we prevent someone from speaking, just literally block them. Or maybe at work we are talking very loud in an open plan work area, or playing our music loud even at work, or typing very loud, all these different things that can annoy. And so there's something that we're not thinking about other people. Or maybe when it comes to social media, that we're rude on social media or on discussion forums, we use the wrong kind of language, maybe even hate speech. Maybe when it comes to gaslighting, that we use our words to manipulate people, create anxiety and fear, demean people. Or maybe we constantly interrupt people, don't allow them to finish what they were saying, just keep interrupting. And maybe it could be that we use rude language. Or maybe it is that we use rude language and make rude sounds that put people off balance. So again, we have to use some of our own examples to see. So just bear with me 1 second, just to see whether I'm still streaming okay. Hold on 1 moment. Okay, that appears to be all right. So just in case that wasn't heard, I was saying maybe we use rude language when we speak to others, or maybe we make rude sounds to put people off balance. So again, you might have some of your own examples, but the main thing is that when we identify verbal rudeness, we need to actually see that these behaviors are not gentle, and therefore we disapprove of them, and we need to abandon them. So one of the key things to recognize is that when we're rude or we're harsh or we're hard, which is the opposite of gentle, what we're doing is we're putting ourselves ahead of others, that we're putting ourselves first without consideration towards others. So what does this indicate? Like we said about other qualities, there's a strong sense of self, atta, that there's this me and mine raising its ugly head again, saying, I value me, I value what is mine before others. Let me jump the queue, let me speak the way I want to, let me physically behave the way I want to, let me scream and shout. So these are all the things that can block loving kindness. So if we abandon the physical and verbal rudeness, this kind of harshness, that's what makes us gentle. So let's do a short meditation, just a few minutes, just to take this Dhamma to our mind. So in the meditation, just pick one example of physical rudeness and see that it will block metta, it will block loving kindness, so we disapprove and we want to abandon it. Likewise, take another example of verbal rudeness, something from your own life, and again, recognize this does not match with metta. Let me disapprove of this, transcend it, and that's how I'm going to be gentle. So just take a few minutes to meditate on this. Blessings of the Triple Gem. blessings of the Triple Gem, we can come out of the meditation. So we now come to anathimani in Pali, which is not arrogant. And this is also translated as humble. So we've looked at arrogance, this anathimani, in developing the Vatupama Sutta. So this is the simile of the cloth. And that was one of the 16 mental states. So what do we know about arrogance? Well, arrogance arises when we feel superior, that we look down on others because of maybe social class, clan, family lineage, beauty, wealth, learning, line of work, skill in a craft, sphere of knowledge, learning, ingenuity, or some other reason, some worldly reason. So when we feel superior, we place ourselves ahead of others. So I'm better, you should respect me, listen to me, I know best. And so we can see that it is a block to loving kindness. So if we've been on the receiving end of arrogance, we know there is a cruelty there, and it's not fun, that there is some kind of delusion overtaking the person that is exhibiting arrogance. And wrong view is the cause. Wrong view meaning the arrogant person does not see the truth. Now, when we lack virtue, that is the condition for arrogance. So if we have virtue, which we currently do because we are upright, thoroughly upright, easy to instruct and gentle, we've done these meditations. So these are the conditions that help us to not be arrogant when we have this virtue. Now, what happens when there is arrogance? Well, we select one volitional formation as better than others. So we give value to that volitional formation and assign permanency to it. So what does that mean? So as an example, an arrogant person might think, my career is really valuable. I studied and worked so hard to rise to the top. This is my happiness and it's a permanent thing. You should respect me and honor me for this. You don't have a career as good as mine, or yours didn't last. So when someone has that kind of thing happening in the mind, there's a block to loving kindness. There's a cruelty there. There's a delusion there. Now, from a supramundane perspective, what the arrogant person doesn't see is the disparaging, the palasa, that's what's taking place in the mind. We value one thing over another thing, but in a supramundane sense, my career, myself, we're not seeing those things are not lasting. And then what the Buddha is saying in a supramundane sense is Buddha teaches about Nibbana, something that is lasting, that cannot be taken away, that does not deteriorate. So arrogance has the wrong view. And when there is the wrong view, it keeps valuing the wrong things. So this is what challenges our ability to develop genuine saddha, genuine conviction or faith, confidence towards Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Why? Well, it's because we value what we can gain in the world. Those are the things that we're assigning and measuring as valuable, which then invites the idea that we can do what we like. We can tolerate unskilled states. There's no danger. There's no problem for me. But the Buddha knows very differently, and this is what we're going to explore. So let's look a little more at some of the things that we can be arrogant about. These can be linked with our vanity or what we can become intoxicated with. So we can be arrogant about what we know. We can be arrogant about our knowledge, our skill, what we've learned. We can be arrogant about being right, being always right on various topics from politics to science to even Dhamma. We can be arrogant about our possessions, our material things, what we've acquired in this life, or maybe we've acquired or inherited. We can be arrogant about the family that we're born to. Maybe we're born to royalty, wealthy families, powerful families, influential families, and on like that. Maybe we're arrogant about our youth, about our looks. So looks, youth, maybe even our good health, maybe even what comprises what we call our life. So what I wanted to do in terms of how we remove arrogance is look at these last three. So youth, good health, and what we think is our life. So we know from the Buddhist teaching on the five frequent contemplations, as well as a number of other suttas, if someone is arrogant about youth, and this can be at any age, what would the Buddha say about this person? Well, the Buddha would say this person does not understand about aging. And if someone is arrogant about their good health, so this person might think, oh, it's because of my diet, my exercise, my good genes, or something else that they're doing, then what would the Buddha say about that kind of person? Well, the Buddha would say this person does not understand about sickness. And then if someone is arrogant about their life, and that could include the family that they're born to, their academic accomplishments, their career or their business, or their spouse and their kids, the things that their kids do, their material possessions, their lifestyle, the places that they can fly to, their knowledge, their power, their influence, and on, then what would the Buddha say about this person? Well, the Buddha would say this person doesn't understand about death. And not just physical death of a person, but death of jobs, death of belongings, things being taken away. So where the Buddha comes to with this is, what is there really to be arrogant about if all of us are born and we're subject to aging, sickness, and death? So this is what the Buddha calls our collective predicament. Where is the lastingness? Where is the permanency? And we're all in the same boat. So we're brothers and sisters in birth, old age, sickness, and death. And we think we're superior. So why are we valuing things that are subject to aging, sickness, and death? And why are we thinking that we're superior if we're all in the same boat? So this is how we remove the arrogance. How we become not arrogant by understanding this Dhamma. So again, let's do another short meditation just to take this Dhamma into our minds. That take your own example of, ask yourself, what am I arrogant about? And then also ask, if we are born, all of us, if we are subject to aging, sickness, and death, why am I holding on to these things? What is there to be arrogant about? And so when we see that, and when we see that this kind of arrogance blocks loving kindness, we need to disapprove of it. We need to abandon it. So take your own example or examples and do the meditation. And then at the end, allow the mind to be happy that it now has these qualities of being upright, thoroughly upright, easy to instruct, gentle, and now not arrogant. Okay, let's meditate. Therawan Saranai, blessings of the Triple Gem. Blessings of the Triple Gem. We can come out of the meditation now. So, of course, there are other things we can be arrogant about. It's also in Dhamma that we can be arrogant about certain things, such as our meditative attainments, our understanding of the suttas, our memory when it comes to the suttas, all kinds of different things, how many retreats we've been on, how many times we've been invited to speak, how many times people have praised us, all kinds of things. So it's also important to include those things when we meditate, because it also gives us holes in our metta bucket. So I wanted to close with this particular sutta. It's called the Dutiya Seka Sutta in Itivuttaka. Itivuttaka always has these lovely short sayings of the Buddha. And this one in particular applies to all of us, especially when we come together for Metta Lab. It says, Bhikkhus, in regard to external factors, I do not perceive another single factor so helpful as good friendship for a bhikkhu. So it still applies to all of us who is a learner, who has not attained perfection but lives aspiring for the supreme security from bondage. Bhikkhus, a bhikkhu who has a good friend abandons what is unwholesome and develops what is wholesome. So that's the first part of what the Buddha says. Then the Buddha says, when a bhikkhu has good friends and is reverential and respectful, doing what his friends advise, clearly comprehending and mindful, he may progressively attain the destruction of all the fetters. So that's inspiring and encouragement for all of us, that when we come together and we train according to what the Buddha instructs, that we are encouraging each other to abandon what is unwholesome, unskilled, and develop what is wholesome, what is skilled, then this is us going together. This is us progressively trying to attain the destruction of all the fetters. So I leave that there for our session today. And next week, we'll be looking at mainly Santindriyo Chanipakocha, which is looking at controlled in the sense faculties and being prudent. And it's a pretty heavy one. So this one I haven't really done online before the way I'm going to do it next week. So this one will bring in a lot of heavy powered suttas from the Buddha in order for us to really, really see the danger in terms of not controlling the spiritual faculties and why it makes us foolish. So that's for next week. So in the meantime, wishing you all well, we can share the merit and the blessings. So our gratitude to the Buddha for these amazing deep teachings. Gratitude to all the people that have helped us, including all the teachers that have helped us up until this point. And we can share the merit with all sentient beings. May all beings be happy and well. May all beings be free from suffering. Blessings of the Triple Gem. May you all grow in wholesome qualities.